In this week's Northern from Adam podcast, we are joined by somebody who has impacted sports as much as any athlete, despite the fact that he's never worn a jersey, he has not been inducted into any Hall of Fame, but he has left a mark unlike any other. Dr. Harry Edwards, a former member of the Black Panthers Party, who backed the Olympic Project for Human Rights, which called for black athletes to boycott the 1968 Mexico City Olympics, who got his doctorate degree from Cornell in 1971, who's authored four books, who's worked with the 49ers for 31 years, who has left a lasting impact on sports and society, Dr. Harry Edwards. Dr. Edwards, I guess we'll start from here. There's so much going on in sports and society today, and you can't just say stick to sports anymore because that's impossible to do. But where do we go from here as a society?
Well, I think that sport is inextricably intertwined with institutional and society-wide developments in any modern nation. And the course of developments in that broader context is going to have a tremendous impact upon what we have to deal with in terms of challenges within the sports institution. And when all of that is inflamed, expanded, turbocharged by comments from the most powerful office in the nation, it's almost like being sucker punched. That's one place that you're not looking for additional complications to emerge. I'm quite certain that the owners did not look for the comments from Mr. Trump in terms of players being called SOBs, which carries a particularly caustic meaning in African-American society, given the number of families that are supported by, headed by, kept together by mothers. That has a particularly caustic meaning in African-American society, and I'm quite certain that the owners, people like Jerry Jones, people like Robert Kraft, did not anticipate that they would be compelled to go out on the field and do a protest gesture in response to that. So it's a very complicated situation. We're intertwined with developments in a broader society within the sports institution, and that's something that we're simply going to have to learn to manage, since it is neither avoidable nor is it possible to eliminate it.
What was your reaction when you heard President Trump say what he did that Friday night in Alabama?
I was not surprised. I mean, it was a sucker punch. He sucker punched owners and threw them under the bus. It wasn't something that I was surprised at, because I watched him, attack Gold Star families and prisoners of war, the statements that he made about women, bragging about sexual assault, the way that he essentially sucker punched the DACA population, who had been led to believe that if they register and come out of the shadows, that they would be protected until something could be done in order to legalize and legitimize their stay here. I watched him sucker punch Ryan and McConnell as they came into a meeting and found out that Schumer and Pelosi were Mr. Trump's new best friends relative to the debt ceiling extension and so forth. I mean, so I was not surprised. I'm not surprised at anything that he does now, but I thought that the impact was something that we were going to really have to manage carefully within the context of the NFL, given the volatile situation that existed going back to 2016 and that we were struggling to deal with in terms of a one person or a few people protesting. This was going to turbocharge that, and the league would have to deal with it.
Had he not said what he did, Dr. Edwards, do you think the protesting would have quietly gone away?
I don't think it would have gone away, but I don't think it would have necessarily metastasized to the extent that that it has. There was always a great deal of sentiment of support for Colin Kaepernick and for Malcolm Jenkins, for Michael Bennett, and athletes who were engaging in protest gestures in their locker rooms. We're talking about locker rooms that are 72% black, and when you look at the proportion of outright recognizable stars, it's probably an overwhelming majority, an even larger majority than that. And there was support for the causes. Not everybody agreed with the methods, but there was support for the causes. And what this did was to push aside the cause to some extent, and athletes began to react to the reality that here was the President of the United States calling their peers, their colleagues, their teammates, SOBs, and insulting their mothers in the process, which is something that nobody takes lightly. So, no, I don't think it would have blown up to the extent that it is. And, of course, the one thing that bothers me more than anything is that I don't know what these shows of unity mean. Is it this something against Trump? Is it something against what he said last Friday and this morning? Is it something that's in support of the causes and so forth that provoked the protest gestures to begin with? I don't know what any of this means, and there's no way we can find out until we see what follows from here.
For those who don't know, you've been an advisor with the 49ers for over 31 years. So when something like this happens, do people within that organization turn to you for guidance?
The first thing that Jed did, because he and I had talked about the possibility of this thing impacting the NFL about 2 years ago.
Wow.
We had a couple of long conversations about some issues that were already well this side of the social political horizon, and the only question was when and how exactly they would blow up. And so when Colin began to sit during the playing of the national anthem, Jed York came to me and essentially said, "Doc, this is your horse. We've got to not only manage this, but everybody involved has got to come out of it better. We've got to come out of it smarter. We've got to come out of it more unified. We've got to come out of it with a better sense of who we are and what we are, and what contribution we can make both within the arena, in the arena, and beyond." That was essentially his statement to me. And of course, I had already been thinking about this for over 2 years and how we would manage the situation, how we would deal with the protest, and then inspire the people who were involved to move beyond protests to programs with an interest in creating progress in all of the issues that they were concerned about. So Jed not only asked me to work with this situation within the context of our own organization, but he put $1 million on the table to match what Colin Kaepernick had put on the table in order to help the organization as a whole move from protest to progress. And I think that we've probably managed this situation about as well as it could be handled under the circumstances.
How did you know 2 years ago that these types of situations would surface in our country today? How did you know that?
Well, because, I mean, you don't have to be Nostradamus to understand this situation. We live in an age where the social media makes everything immediate, timely, and imminently accessible. And so when you have photos, camera photos from camera phones of police officers shooting black men in the back as they're running away, when you have Oscar Grant's murder on camera on the rapid transit platform in Oakland, California, when you have Tremere Rice, a 12-year-old kid, playing cops and robbers in a park, shot down by police officers, and you have it on camera, and you have Mike Brown's body lying in the street for 3.5 hours, and you have it on camera. You have people sitting in cars with their hands on the steering wheel, shot to death, and you have it on camera, and nobody goes to jail, nobody is charged. It's just a matter of time before people who are themselves vulnerable, who realized that the only reason that it was Mike Brown instead of me is that I was not there. And in point of fact, because of the community that I come from, this could happen to one of my siblings, one of my relatives in my own community. I have to speak out about this. And being in the league for 31 years, I hear all of the conversations in the locker room. I talk to the athletes. I get calls from athletes about these issues. So, again, you didn't have to be Nostradamus to realize the volatility of the kind of access that we have now, owing to the social media and technology, and the growing consciousness of athletes about the relevance of these issues to them personally, that their money won't save them, their status won't save them. It wasn't accidental that Michael Bennett ended up down on his face in Las Vegas with a gun against his head. That could happen to any of us at any time. So I knew that it was just a matter of time, given the impact of the social media, the visibility of situations that we've all been aware of in the black community for generations before these athletes began to speak up and say, essentially, we're better than this, to sound the alarm and say, we need to do something about this. It was inevitable.
So you knew it was coming. You knew
Absolutely.
It was coming. Where's it going, though? Where's it going?
Well, I think that depends upon the degree of authenticity in terms of what happened this past Sunday, for example, and what happens going forward. If the owners were simply punching back against Trump because he sucker punched them and threw them under the bus, they never saw that coming, then it's not going anywhere. It's going to become more and more and more an issue. If last Sunday was authentic and they were in unity about the issues, then I think that they will have incentive to put money, put time in, bring in sponsors and so forth to get behind programs, to create programs in the various communities and regions where their franchises are to deal with the issues involved, police-community relationships, greater opportunities, having businesses deal with the economic problems of some of the areas and so forth. These are men of power. These are billionaires who are tied into other billionaires, corporate interests, and so forth. If that gesture, if the gestures this past Sunday were authentic, then you will begin to see follow-through. You will begin to see movement from protest to progress through programmatic intervention and support in the regions and cities of their franchises, and they will begin to have a real impact and difference. If those gestures were merely a punch back against Trump, then it's going nowhere. The second thing I would look for is whether or not some owner steps up and brings in Colin Kaepernick out of the cold. If Colin Kaepernick is still out there and without a job, if they're still asking us to believe that there are 96 quarterbacks, including 32 clipboard holders, who are so much better than Colin Kaepernick that not only is he not on the roster, but he doesn't even deserve a tryout. If they're still asking us to believe that, and that this is not a political decision, but a football decision that they made, that he shouldn't be on the roster, then this isn't going anywhere. In point of fact, it's going to exacerbate the situation, because one thing is very, very clear, and that is that Mr. Trump is going to strike again. He did this morning. He will do so continually, because that's him. And there are only so many times that they can go out and do a gesture to show unity with the players in opposition to Mr. Trump instead of in support of the players' concerns about the issues. At some point, we're going to have a clear and evident answer to the question of whether what happened this Sunday was authentic, or whether it was one of the grossest, most craven demonstrations of hypocrisy in the annals of sports history.
You brought up Colin Kaepernick, Dr. Edwards. You've worked with Colin Kaepernick. You've worked with the 49ers, as we mentioned. Is this going to get him the job? You talked about the chances that it could. Is this going to be what pushes through the final effort to land him with the team?
Well, I think that that's a question that can only be answered within the broader context of authenticity that I just discussed. For example, let's take another example, see if we can get some clarity of vision in terms of what I'm talking about. If the Montgomery bus boycott had not been about the broader issue of the desegregation of public transportation facilities and so forth, white waiting rooms, white seats versus black seats on buses. If it had only been about getting Rosa Parks her seat back, it would have been a different kind of movement. Rosa Parks being able to sit in any seat on the bus was part of a broader struggle that involved the basic fundamental issues in question, namely Jim Crow segregated public transportation. So Cap getting his getting a job in the NFL cannot be simply about Cap getting a job in the NFL any more than a Montgomery bus boycott would have made sense if it had just been about getting Rosa Parks her seat back. This has to be part of a broader struggle to deal with the league's disposition and commitment to supporting their athletes and dealing with the issues that their athletes feel to be critically important, and that the league has the potential, doesn't have the obligation, but it most certainly has the potential and the opportunity to have an impact at a time when this society needs to really seriously begin to deal with these issues, if for no other reason than the technology of the day. The social media has literally brought it into our living rooms.
Mm-hmm. How much of the fact that Colin does not have a job today has to do with his stances as opposed to his talents?
Well, I think that I think that it only has to do with his stances. Fact that he sounded the alarm, the fact that he took a knee, and after looking at the murder of black men, women, and children, 147 black men, women, and children shot down in the streets of this country every year since 1968, and said nobody is paying sufficient attention to this. We're better than this as a society. We're better than this as a nation. The Constitution of the United States promises more than this, and we need to begin to pay attention to it. He was saying something that went to the very heart of a conversation that has been avoided in this society for 400 years. We have yet to have an open, honest conversation about racial equality and white supremacy in American society. This is what raises such a problem in terms of what the owners did this past Sunday. They weren't outraged when Trump refused to denounce neo-Nazis and Ku Klux Klanners and white supremacists marching in the streets of Charlottesville. They weren't outraged when Trump attacked a Gold Star Muslim family. They weren't outraged even when he attacked Senator John McCain, a prisoner of war, and called him a loser. They weren't outraged when he talked about grabbing and groping women. The only time the owner showed outrage was when he sucker punched them and threw them under the bus and called the players who were demonstrating SOBs and compelled them to either stand up and defend and support their players or stand silent, which is the same as standing with him. And they knew that if they did that, they probably signed their last free agent, especially those who supported him, such as Kraft and Jerry Jones and some others. So at the end of the day, the issue is not about Cap's athletic ability or his football ability. I mean, you only have to look at some of the starters of the first 3 weeks to see that that's the case. You look at a few of those guys. I mean, there's some guys in college who could probably do a better job than a few of them did this past week. So at the end of the day, it's nobody believes that there are 96 quarterbacks in the league, including 32 clipboard holders, who are better than Colin Kaepernick. Nobody believes that. That's not even common sense. They have made a political decision because of the message that we should be discussing these issues, that these issues are critically important, and that goes against the political ideology probably of a majority of the owners in the NFL.
You don't think racial equality has been discussed over 400 years? And again, I'm looking at this from an entirely different perspective than you, granted. But you don't think it's been discussed in 400 years?
No, I don't think that racial discussions of racial equality is not the issue.
Yep.
The issue is a discussion of the core factors behind racial inequality.
Right.
And that is something that was set in place from the time that white men came to these shores from Europe, went back to Europe, and reported that we have discovered a new land, and there were people standing on the shore watching us get off the boat, because those people didn't matter. And then when you bring that together with the genocide against those people who saw them getting off the boat, and the enslavement of Africans for over almost 300 years, then you begin to get down to the core of the institutional foundations of American society. White supremacy was the original sin. It wasn't slavery. Slavery occurred because of white supremacy. We have not had that discussion because it's so tied up with white identity, white privilege, and so forth. And when you start having that discussion, people get uncomfortable, especially the wealthy, the isolated, the secure, and the arrogant. They begin to get uncomfortable if you tell them that the guy that plays football for them is equal to them and deserves equal treatment and status in society. They don't feel comfortable with that. But it's not just them. It's Joe Lunchbucket. It's Sally Soap Opera. It's Jack Sixpack. You know, we have to have that discussion in American society. Why do we have this racial inequality? Why is it so persistent? Why, I don't care what we do, we can't get down to the core of it. That's what these athletes are saying. We're better than this. We can do better. And we have to have this conversation. And for that, they are ostracized, they're challenged, they're condemned, they're questioned. And it comes down even sometimes to people saying that Colin Kaepernick is not better even than one of the 32 clipboard holders that hold roster spots in this league today.
As a longtime, well-respected member of the 49ers, how much influence did you have over Colin Kaepernick when he decided to kneel?
Colin Kaepernick is one of the brightest, most articulate, committed, and courageous athletes that I have ever encountered.
Wow.
And I have known and been friends for years with Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Arthur Ashe, I knew extremely well, Kurt Flood, of course, John Carlos, and Tommy Smith, my good friend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I talk to two or three times a month. And I would put him in that class. It's not people, there are things that happen within the context of this situation that are targeting Cap and in an effort to undermine the credibility and legitimacy of what he is saying and doing. One of the things that happens is he's listening to the wrong people. Mm-hmm. He must be poorly advised. Cap follows his own counsel. He's one of the brightest, most articulate individuals, and he is like a sponge. He reads incessantly. He follows his own counsel. That's a red herring. Nobody's advising him. He needs less advice probably than Trump does. Yes. The same with regard to this notion about, well, what do you think about what Ray Lewis said about Kaepernick? I don't care about what Ray Lewis says. It doesn't matter. What do you think about what Michael Vick said about it? I don't care. I'm not going to get off on a tangent about Ray Lewis versus Kaepernick. I don't care about what Ray Lewis said. I'm interested in the validity and credibility and veracity of what Colin Kaepernick said in terms of these issues. So at the end of the day, this idea that Cap is being ill-advised, poorly advised, too many cooks in the kitchen, too many people in his ear, and so forth, has nothing to do with anything. Colin Kaepernick is bright, articulate, well-read, constantly looking for more information and input, and he has more than the level of competence and intelligence to sort through the nonsense and the verbiage and get down to what really matters in terms of what his principal commitment is.
You think, though, that history will look upon him the same way that it looks upon some of those trailblazers that you mentioned, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like Jim Brown, like Bill Russell? Colin Kaepernick will be mentioned with those men in history?
No, he'll be mentioned alongside Muhammad Ali. This is the fourth wave of athlete activism that was essentially set off by a mixed-race young man out of Turlock, California, who went to Nevada, Reno, and was drafted in the second round of the NFL draft, and who was actually injured at the time that he began to speak up and speak out about these issues. And he's had such an impact that people all over the world are asking about, tell us about these issues. Why has this thing persisted, and why has it blown up? Just since this season started, I have literally gotten calls from all over the world asking about why was President Obama last year in China addressing how he felt about Kaepernick's protests? How far is this going to go? Why do you have congressmen and legislators and others, governors and mayors, police chiefs talking about the athlete protests? This is the kind of impact that he is having. And this is why early on in 2016, I got memorabilia, jerseys, shoes, autographed materials, and sent them to the Smithsonian and told them to hold on to them, because at some point you're going to have to open a kiosk and put that whole legend of history in there. An individual, a single person who launched a movement around injustice in communities of color in America, who launched the fourth wave of athlete activism in this country, just as Muhammad Ali launched the third wave in 1967.
And forgive me for not knowing this, but where did Tommy Smith and Joan Carlos fit into that wave of athlete activism there, Dr. Edwards?
In the third wave, they were the most iconic image of that third wave. The only competing image is Muhammad Ali standing over Sonny Liston. But as far as the face of that third wave, it was Tommy Smith and John Carlos on the victory podium in Mexico City, which most sports journalists around the world consider the most iconic sports image of the 20th century. And they were part of a movement that came to be known as the Revolt of the Black Athlete, that challenged racism, discrimination, and violence against people of color and the communities of people of color in American society. That's what that demonstration was about. And they were saying the same thing that Colin Kaepernick is saying. Colin isn't defiling the flag. He's honoring what the flag is supposed to stand for. What he is saying is the same thing that John Carlos and Tommy Smith were communicating. We are better than our leaders, such as Martin Luther King being shot down in the street. We are better than four little girls being bombed and killed in a church in Birmingham, Alabama. We are better than three civil rights workers being murdered. We are better than Mega Evers being shot down. We are better than that. That was their message. This is the message today that Colin Kaepernick is putting forward. And all of this other stuff, he's not honoring the flag. He's disrespecting our soldiers. He's disrespecting the police. He is against America. All of that is simply a red herring to put out there by people who, in many instances, simply do not want to discuss this issue. We have got to get to the bottom of this issue. We're sitting here with a little guy over there in North Korea who is waving nukes at us, and we're talking about athletes not honoring the flag. We're sitting here with tragic natural disasters in Florida, in Puerto Rico, in Texas, And we're talking about whether somebody is taking a knee and saying we're better than all of these murders and this discrimination and everything. And it's time for us to do better. If for no other reason, we've got to be united to confront the challenges that we face in the world. And all of a sudden, the ones who are sounding the alarm are the bad guys. The ones who are saying, let's have a discussion at the White House with the president about these issues are disinvited from the White House. There's something sick about that. So, no, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Arthur Ashe, Curt Flood, these athletes were essentially saying the same thing as these athletes who are activists today. We as a society and as a people are better than that, and as a nation, we have an obligation to do better.
And Colin Kaepernick, just to be clear, was honoring the flag. Honoring.
Absolutely. Let me tell you a story. I was invited to go come to West Point to give a series of lectures and participate in workshops on recruitment and that particular generation of athletes. And while I was there, I was assigned a young man to show me around, to make sure that I got around, got to where I was supposed to be on time, and so forth and so on. But during that same week, there was a memorial service for a young man who had graduated from West Point and who had gone to Afghanistan and was killed. They were having his memorial service. It turned out that the young man who was showing me around was a freshman, and the guy, former cadet who was killed was his mentor when he came in as a freshman. And so as I'm sitting there reading the paper about this, I asked him, I said, well, how do you feel about this? You know that you're not going to go into a corporation. You know that you're not going to go into an Ivy League school and get a PhD. You're not going into the NBA or the NFL. You're probably going to end up in Iraq or Afghanistan or someplace else in harm's way. I said, how do you feel about this as you sit here and read this memorial obituary here in the paper and go to that service? He said, I'm more committed than ever. He said, because that's what we do. We are the ones who defend the Constitution. We're the ones who defend this nation. Honor, country, duty, Constitution are more committed than ever. Here's a young man who is sitting there looking at a guy who mentored him being buried, and he still stands. And when the country calls, he says, send me. When they played the national anthem, I stood there next to him with tears in my eyes. But the other side of that is, what is he fighting and sacrificing for? Mm-hmm. And he hit it right on the head, for the rights of American people to be free. And part of that freedom is the right to protest far right. The first line of the United States Constitution says, we the people, not we the Congress or we the presidents or we the mayors or the governors or the state legislators. It says we the people in order to form that more perfect union. Colin Kaepernick takes that seriously. It doesn't say we the people with the exception of athletes. Mm-hmm. That's what these soldiers are fighting for. That's what they sacrifice for. And there are a lot of soldiers in this country. They don't get a lot of publicity because the press is not inclined to put that out there. But there are a lot of soldiers that have come up to me, that have called me, that have emailed me and said, that's what I was fighting for. I don't agree with his method, but I absolutely defend and have defended with my life his right to use that method as a vehicle of protest, far right. So there's no conflict between the military, the police, and so forth, who stand behind the Constitution and what these athletes are doing.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Harry Edwards in a moment, but first, a word from ZipRecruiter. In need of great talent for your business but short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then, ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. That's ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. One more time to try to get it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/knowthem. So athletes have an advantage that certain members of the military don't. They get a platform. They get a platform. What would you say are the best ways that you feel sports can help impact social change today, Dr. Edwards?
I think that I would like to see every team have somebody whose job it is to discern what are the issues that are critical to their personnel beyond, especially their athletes, beyond the arena.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort out and sort through what is it that this franchise can do to help support you in terms of having an impact, given this tremendous megaphone you have, which has been made even greater by the social media and the internet,
mm-hmm.
and the influence that you have. What can we do to help you to impact those areas that are so critically important to you beyond the arena? And if that happened, it would hasten the probability, the possibility of moving from protest to progress. And some athletes who are sympathetic but disagree with the methods would eagerly join in helping to institute programs, helping to support programs, helping to work directly with the community. And there are a lot of athletes that are doing a lot of things in the community, but oftentimes it's without franchise support. It's without franchise involvement. Well, now that the franchises, the owners, are out there on the sideline taking knees and locking arms, they can't avoid involvement now unless they want to look like craven hypocrites.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have to step up now and say, what can we do together? That's one of the things I learned from Bill Walsh as a result of working with him mm-hmm. for over 20 years. He made the statement that all due respect to Super Bowl championships, Super Bowl rings, conference championships, all of the money and everything else involved in this great game, the reason God really gave us this game, which is so high risk, so violent, so competitive, is to demonstrate what we can do under the most challenging of circumstances mm-hmm. together. That was his mantra.
Yeah.
That's why we have the National Football League, because God gave us this highly competitive, even violent game to show what we can accomplish together. Well, why can that not extend beyond the arena? But it has to be done reasonably, intelligently, with vision and with foresight. Nobody is for the police and communities of color not trusting each other. Mm-hmm. Who gains from that? Nobody gains from that. So how do we bring that together? How do we use this tremendous platform and this megaphone that we have to contribute to resolving that situation? We're not going to be able to do it all, but we most certainly should have some input. We should be committed to having an impact. That's what these teams can do.
I was sitting today with Herm Edwards, who was your former student when you were a sociology of sports teacher at Cal. And he told me, and you could correct if I'm wrong, but he said that Bill Walsh hiring you to help deal with the black athletes back in the day when he first brought you aboard. Was that the reason that he hired you in San Francisco?
Bill Walsh was the greatest teacher that I've ever encountered, and I consider myself a great teacher. I'd have 700-800 students in a class.
Yeah.
Bill Walsh was the greatest teacher that I've ever encountered because what he taught, he had to go out and demonstrate in four dimensions. All I had to do was get it from the lectures or the book page into their head and then back on the test page. He had to go out and get them to execute it in four dimensions of time and space. He was also a visionary. He's one of the brightest people I've ever come across in my life. He and I had been exchanging letters and lectures since 1982. And then in 1985, he came in and brought me in and said, we need programs because there's a demographic transition taking place in our locker room, and somehow we have to get out in front of this so that we manage it correctly and are able to continue to do what we have been hired to do, which is to win football games and to win them in a way that is demonstrable of who we are and what we aspire to be as a franchise and as a team. And so when he brought me in, it wasn't just for the black athletes. It was for the team and the organization. When I asked him, okay, Bill, where is my office? He said, your office is the building. Wow. Any door you want to walk in and talk to anybody. And I want you in the locker room more so than anywhere. But your office is the building. You don't have a place where you can go and sit down and this is where I work. And so what he saw me as doing was dealing with any issue that appeared to impede or looked as if it had the potential of impeding the evolution of the type of organization that he wanted and that he wanted to project and present, not just in the league, but in society. So he was a visionary in terms of his understanding of the dynamics of developments at the interface of sport and society, and particularly of race sport and society, given the demographic transition that was taking place in the NFL, where you're beginning to have not just a majority of black players in the locker room, but a majority of your stars were black players. The Jerry Rices, the Ronnie Lotts, the Roger Craigs, and so forth. He saw that evolving and said, we've got to get out in front of this and learn to manage that which we can neither eliminate nor avoid, and in point of fact, that which in all likelihood is going to be a positive not just for the league but for the society. So it wasn't just come in to manage the black players as if this was something where you had to have somebody out on the back end of a plantation. No, he wanted me in to manage the transitions that would be necessary in order for the San Francisco 49ers to become what they became, what people used to say was the gold standard of sports organizations and one that operated like a smooth, well-oiled machine.
So you guys out there have always been out front. Between you and Coach Walsh and you and Jed York, you have seen these trends coming before the rest of society did.
Absolutely. Long before anybody thought that it was legitimate, much less possible, for a franchise to intercede into the personal lives and activities of players, Bill Walsh and I had established a player program agenda involving post-career occupational preparation, degree completion, personal and family counseling, and tax, finance, and investment counseling. Those four programs were ultimately adopted by the whole league. But they started at the San Francisco 49ers in 1985. We launched the Minority Coaches Outreach Program. Marvin Lewis was one of our first interns.
Correct.
It's no accident that Ray Rhodes, Denny Green, all of those guys came through the San Francisco 49ers initially.
Wow.
So this was in 1985. The league adopted those programs as we moved toward the 1990s and ultimately tacked on the Rooney Rule to them so that now we have most of the black head coaches who are in the league now came through the internship program and then as assistants and then moved into a head coaching position. So Bill Walsh and the San Francisco 49ers, that whole tradition, I guess I've been one of the consistent threads through the through the whole thing. But Jed York and Denise York and John York have also been out in the forefront of this thing. These, what's happening today, we were talking about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and how do we prepare to manage it? And here it is.
We'll be back with more from Dr. Harry Edwards in a moment, but first, a word from DraftKings. Football season's begun, but it's not too late to get closer to the game you love with DraftKings 1 Week Fantasy Football. This Sunday, DraftKings is hosting a $100,000 contest that's totally free to enter. With DraftKings, there are many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against a group of your friends. DraftKings also has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. And you'll never burn up the waiver wire trying to replace the injured players because you get to pick a new team every week. That's the beauty of 1 Week Fantasy at DraftKings. So get to DraftKings.com now and use promo code Schefter, S-C-H-E-F-T-E-R, Schefter, to play in DraftKings' free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. That's promo code Schefter to compete for your share of $100,000 in total prizes. The contest is totally free to enter. Why wouldn't you try? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Dr. Edwards, as you look back at your outstanding career with the 49ers, and it goes well beyond that, but with your 49ers, what are you most proud of during your 31 years with the organization?
I'm most proud of the relationships that I've had. When I go back and look at the people that I've had the profound privilege of working with, being associated with, getting to know, winning and losing with, that's the thing that I'm most proud of because I learned so much from it. The relationship that I have had with Bill Walsh, I treasure to this day. The people that I've gotten to know, the Ronnie Lotts, the Jerry Rices, the Tom Rathmans, the Charles Haley's, with all of his issues, to think about what Charles Haley accomplished in this league, being bipolar, being challenged as he was, but yet to contribute the way he did, to wind up with 5 Super Bowl rings, to wind up in the NFL Hall of Fame, to know somebody like that, to have worked with somebody like that, aside from the fact that he kept me on the payroll with his shenanigans, I mean, to have gotten to know him and to work with him was a profound privilege. You don't find better people to deal with as in a violent, collision-oriented game where every Sunday is like going through the windshield of a bus, but they come back and they play again that next week because all of the guys around them went through that same windshield and they're all taking the field again that following week. You learn something about people, and that was a profound privilege. It's not the 4 Super Bowl rings that I have. It's not all of the other honors and so forth that have come from my involvement with sport at the professional level. It's the relationships that I've had with people that are that I remember and treasure most.
Dr. Edwards, you've been the author of 4 books. You have been married for nearly 50 years, if my math is correct.
Yep.
And you have 3 children. One's a lawyer, one's a physician, and one's in information technology computer programming. How do you raise 3 people to be as accomplished as the 3 children you have? What is the key there?
Well, we always had one basic fundamental rule. No babies, no dope, and no bums. And when my kids ask me, how will they know a bum, I told them, you'll know a bum when I see one. A bum carries a particular meaning in black society. So when LeBron James tells Trump, you bum, he's not talking about somebody who's out of work. He's not talking about somebody with a 3-day old beard who looked like they slept under the bridge. He's talking about somebody who is so deficient, so below standard in terms of character, decency, and so forth that they're not worth being around. That not only do you not want to be next to them, you don't want to be downwind from them. They're just that. That's what. So when I told my kids no bums, they knew exactly what I was talking about. They knew exactly what we were talking about. The other thing that has mattered tremendously is something that I advise every young man who comes to me to do. Always marry up. You want to marry somebody that is so far above you in terms of their basic decency, humanity, and so forth, intellect and so forth, that you get a case of the bends when you stand up to give them a kiss. And that's what I was able to do. To the extent that our kids have done well, it's substantially because of the woman that has been in my life for the last 50 years.
Sandra Bose Edwards.
She was here when I was out trying to save the world. She was here making sure that they got to soccer, that they got to their piano lessons, that their homework was done. And this is while she was also carrying on a career of her own. She was with the Milpitas Unified School District for 35 years as a teacher, principal, and as an administrator, deputy superintendent of the Milpitas School District, Unified School District here in California. And she also was the one who was here every day, even as I was running around the country and running around the world trying to save humanity and convince people that sport was not the tar department of human affairs, that this was an important area that we needed to pay attention to.
So you married up.
I married up, and I would advise anybody to do the same thing. Of course, given the mental disposition and so forth for most men, that's a pretty low bar. But that's what you want to do. You always want to marry up.
And how successful would you say you have been at helping to save humanity?
You know what? That's one that I'm not even going to begin to try to evaluate. At 75 years old, I know I got more time behind me than I've gotten in front of me, and I don't want to waste what time that I have trying to evaluate what impact I've had. That's something that when I'm on the other side of the lawn, people will decide for themselves. I hope in the end that somebody will at least think that I always tried to fight the good fight, that I never shafted anybody or any institution that didn't have it coming, and that I always took tremendous pride in being disliked by the right people. And so, which means that I always try to stand up, irrespective of the controversy involved, tried to stand up for the right thing. And if that is what people arrive at, then I'm more than satisfied with that. But in the years that I have left, I'm not going to sit around and try to decide, you know, what my legacy is, what impact I've had. I'll leave that to others. There'll be plenty of time to do that.
In the years that you do have left, and this has been a decorated career where we're talking with somebody, Dr. Harry Edwards, who graduated with a degree in sociology in 1964, was a former member of the Black Panthers Party. You backed the Olympic Project for Human Rights. You received your doctorate from Cornell in 1971. All these things. What is there left for you to do, Dr. Edwards?
Continue to contribute. I will absolutely guarantee you that the last words out of my mouth as I'm lying on my deathbed will be, I protest. So at the end of the day, I'm going to continue to speak up, speak out, try to be on the right side of history and the issues, and try to let the next generation know that there's an obligation in America to exercise those rights that have been sacrificed for, fought for, that men and women have died for over the years, that citizenship in a democracy is not a spectator sport, so to speak. It is participatory citizenship that matters. And we don't have to get at each other's throats over our differences. For all of this back and forth over the athlete protests, I'm not discouraged by this. They call it democracy. That's why you see what you see. You wouldn't see this in Putin's Russia. You wouldn't see this in probably 70% of the countries on the face of this earth. But we Americans are committed to this process, as bad as it is, except for all of the other processes on the face of this earth. So I'm not discouraged by this. And let me tell you something else. We're going to be all right. Yeah. We're going to come through this. We're going to come through this. We came through a civil war. We came through a violent labor struggle in the 1930s, and we came out of them better. We came through a civil rights movement that took three times as many lives from the turn of the 20th century to Dr. King's assassination as were killed in the attack on the Twin Towers. But we came through it, and we not only came through that civil rights movement, we came through it better. We came through a violent anti-war movement in this country, but we came through it better. That's what we Americans do. So we're going to be just fine because we the people are going to somehow manage to pick up the pieces and move on, and we're going to come out of it better. So I feel very optimistic about it all, and I just hope that I can continue up until my last breath to make some contribution in that regard.
Sometimes it doesn't feel that way, Dr. Edwards. With everything going on in the world, it doesn't feel that way. I have to be honest with you.
Yep, it doesn't feel that way. But you know what? That's why I've always stated the greatest saying to come out of the 1960s was not "we shall overcome." It wasn't "black power." It wasn't "power to the people." It wasn't "freedom now." The greatest slogan to come out of the 1960s was "keep the faith." Because even in the face of what our rationality tells us is a desperate time, we have to keep the faith. And as far as Mr. Trump, every place I go, people are talking about Trump. Well, Trump said this, Trump said that. You know what? Unless he's indicted and falls into the sewer next to that other crook, Richard Nixon, given what he has managed to accomplish, if this is indicative of what is going to be his legacy, he's going to end up right there on that same tier of forgettability and irrelevance as Franklin Pierce, Millard, what's his name, and Chester Arthur. You remember Frank and Chester and Millard? That's where he's going to end up. And so we need to take this, deal with it as it comes up, and realize that as long as we the people are committed to this nation, committed to making that creating that more perfect union, we're going to be just fine. We always have been, and we will continue to be as long as we keep the faith.
Dr. Edwards, I appreciate the fact that you did not protest when I tried to track you down, and you didn't protest when I asked you to come on my podcast, and you didn't protest at any of the questions that I got to ask you. Although there was so much I still wanted to get you, I've taken so much of your time. At some point, I'm going to come back and try to get you again as another guest, and I hope you don't protest then.
I won't, and I appreciate the opportunity, Adam. I really do. I have a lot of respect for you.
Thank you. The respect is beyond mutual, Dr. Edwards. I appreciate your time and your thoughts and all your contributions.
Thank you very much.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.